Happy Halloween! You're listening to Something Weird. I'm Brooke, and this is Anna.
Ooh, it's my ghost. Here you'll find semi-regular dialogue on all things paranormal, or just even a little bit weird. We're lifelong friends who have had an affinity for the strange since we first met, and now we're here to sneak into the mysterious with you.
So if you couldn't tell, we're pretty excited that it's Halloween, and when this airs, Halloween will be tomorrow. So instead of the usual one person tells a tale, we decided we would do a special spooky episode for you all, where we each share one of our favorite ghost stories, or even just something spooky.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
All the spooks.
So we have prepared stories for one another. It'll be a surprise. We don't know what we're going to tell, but we have a double feature. So hopefully they actually will be short and sweet, and you will get two spooky stories.
Get spooky.
Time to get spooky. So I'm going first with my ghost story. And for one of my favorite ghost stories, I don't know if you really call it a ghost story, maybe just a really terrible story that involves ghosts.
Oh.
I'm not really sure if this counts, but it's one of my favorites. And I am going to tell you, Anna, about the Villisca Axe Murder House.
Ooh. Okay.
Ooh. Heard of it?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, let me tell you. I'm just going to dive right in.
Dive on in.
It's June 10th.
Sorry.
Shut up. It's my story time. It's June 10th, 1912, and the Moore family of Villisca, Iowa, are headed to bed, just a regular night. Joe and Sarah Moore are asleep, or getting into bed, going to sleep upstairs, while their four children are in a room down the hall. And also in their house in the guest room on the first floor are two girls, the Stillinger sisters, who they had invited over after a church activity for a sleepover. So shortly after midnight, as the family had made it to bed and are all sleeping soundly, a stranger enters into the house through an unlocked door. Which, mind you, we're talking about small town Iowa in 1912. Alarm systems, locking doors, not really a thing. So the stranger comes in through the house and picks up first an oil lamp from a nearby table as he passes by.
Wait.
He must...
I'm not starting things off on the right foot, but did what? You tell me what year this was?
1912.
Okay.
Hence the oil lamp.
Yeah, okay. That's... Yeah.
So the first thing that he does is picks up an oil lamp and he kind of fidgets with the oil lamp until it is burning so low that he is supplying enough light and burning very, very slowly for just himself. So in one hand, he holds the oil lamp, and in the other, he has an axe. So he passes first the sleeping girls that are downstairs in the guest room, and he first goes up the main stairwell up into the parents' room. He creeps past the parents' room and then heads down the hallway where the children are sleeping. He heads into the children's room and then finally heads back downstairs to the guest room where the two visiting children are staying as well. And just as quickly as he came, he leaves. He takes keys from the home, locks the door behind him, and is never seen again. The next morning, the neighbors who were close with the Moores noticed that a pretty typically lively house was dead quiet that morning. So they're alarmed, and they let Joe Moore's brother know that nothing's really going on and they should probably take a look. So he lets himself in. Joe had a spare key to the house, lets himself in, and makes his way through the households. What he finds is that everyone in the house, all eight of them, had been bludgeoned beyond recognition.
Okay.
So Joe immediately calls for the police. They come through and do an initial investigation, and they determine that the Moore parents had been murdered first and with very obvious force. The axe that had been used to kill them had been swung so high and so hard above the murderer's head that it had gouged holes in the ceiling above the bed.
Hmm.
Joe alone had been hit with the axe at least 30 times, and the faces of both parents, as well as all of the children that were there, were reduced to essentially bloody pulp. The state of the bodies was horrifying, obviously, but that wasn't even the worst part. As investigators moved through the house, they realized that the killer had apparently set up some kind of ritual to kind of celebrate or commemorate the murder. He had covered the Moore parents' head with sheets, the Moore children's faces with clothing. He went throughout each room of the house and covered all of the mirrors and the windows with cloth and towels. And at some point, he had taken a 2-pound hunk of uncooked bacon from the fridge and placed it in the living room, along with a keychain that he had found in the house.
Okay, I get the bacon. That says celebration to me, but... Okay.
Does it?
Bacon?
Does that make sense?
Well, I mean... Ish.
What?
I don't know. Never mind. I'm going to turn my light off so it's bacon, creepy.
But...
Ooh. Ooh! Mills, you have to do it. No. It changes everything.
No.
You have to.
No!
You have to.
Finley, I need you in here. Oh my gosh. It's so dark. I can't see your face at all. I just hear a wine glass.
That's not important. I'm not drinking wine.
Oh, fuck. I don't like this. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about with the bacon. Why on earth would you put a 2-pound piece of bacon in the middle of
the
living room?
Well, I'm just saying, like, if you were going to prepare it, maybe.
Okay. Well, unprepared. In addition to the bacon and the keychain, there was a bowl of water that was found in the home, and spirals of blood were within it. Police believed that the murderer had washed his hands in that bowl before leaving the house to leave clean and orderly and unsuspecting.
Hmm.
Now, by the time that the police and the coroner, even a minister and several doctors, had gone through the crime scene, word had spread across the town like wildfire. And within just a couple of hours, there were hundreds of people waiting outside of the house to get a look at this gruesome murder.
Okay.
Eef. Officials cautioned the townspeople against going inside, but as soon as the premises was clear, at least 100 townspeople gave in to their interest or intrigue, and they walked through the blood-splattered
home. What? Are you kidding me? Who?
No. That's disgusting.
It's pathetic. Like, what the f-
Yeah.
It just makes me mad.
Well, get this. One of the townspeople went so far as to take a fragment of Joe's skull as a keepsake. Fucking sicko.
It's just dumb. Like,
yeah.
You're contaminating. Oh my gosh. Just the idiocy abounds.
Yeah. I mean, sure, it's 1912, but you're not that dumb. I don't care what year it is. And of course, with 100-plus people going through the house, the crime scene is completely ruined and also pretty much wipes away any chance of them finding the killer.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't trust this police force to do much anyway, so...
Fair. So as for the perpetrator of the Villisca Axe murders... there were very few leads. There are a few people that had the potential of being a real suspect, but nothing was ever found. Bloodhounds were brought in, but with no success, as the crime scene had been completely demolished by the townspeople strolling their way through. A few suspects were named over time, but none of them actually panned out, and no one was actually convicted of the crime. The first of the suspects was Frank Jones, who was a local businessman and had been in competition with Joe Moore. Moore had worked for Jones for 7 years in the farm equipment sales business before leaving and starting his own rival business. There was also a rumor that Joe Moore was having an affair with Jones's daughter-in-law.
Okay.
But these claims were completely unfounded. Okay. The townspeople, our lovely townspeople, insist, however, that the Moores and the Joneses harbored a deep hatred for one another and thought that that was enough to spark the murder. The second suspect seemed a bit more likely, and we even got a confession out of him, but he quickly recanted, claiming police brutality and force.
Yeah, that makes sense, too.
That happens. So, Lynn George Jacqueline Kelly was an English immigrant. He did have a history of sexual deviance and mental problems, and he even admitted to being in town the night of the Villisca Axe murders. And had admitted that he had left very early in the morning. He was small. He was a small guy, small in structure, kind of a quiet, meek personality. So that made people think there is no way that he was actually capable of killing these people in the way that he did. But other factors about him and his history made the police think that he was the right guy. Kelly was left-handed, which police determined from the blood spatter that the killer must have been left-handed. He also had a history with the Moore family, as he had been seen watching them while at church and out and about in town. A dry cleaner in the nearby town had received bloody clothing from Kelly a few days after the murder. He also reportedly asked police for access to the home after the crime while he was posing as a Scotland Yard officer.
Seems suspicious.
Yes, to say the least. So to the police, he fit the bill. And at one point, after a long interrogation, he eventually signed a confession detailing the crime. However, almost immediately he recanted, and the jury refused to indict him. So for years, police looked into every possible scenario and every possible suspect, but it ended with nothing. It was a single attack. They do not know if this was part of a larger string of murders or potentially a serial killer. But soon, reports of similar enough crimes started to happen throughout the country that they started to question, maybe this is one individual. The crimes that followed weren't quite as gruesome, but they had two very important common threads. There was a use of an axe as the murder weapon, and there was presence of an oil lamp set to burn extremely low at the scene.
Okay.
So despite these murders having something in common, no actual connections were ever made, and the case eventually ran cold, and the house was boarded up. Until 1994.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Okay, Martha Lynn. Martha Lynn, who in 1994 is 77, bought the house, restored it to its 1912 condition, stripping the place of all electricity and plumbing. It had been renovated throughout the years, but no one ever really did anything with it. So she stripped any modern commodity of the house and turned it into a tourist attraction. So she reset the house to look like and model what the Moores would have been living in 1912.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, can I just pause? While I'm telling this story, Zach has been sending me a string of texts. He's in Michigan right now for like a football, whatever. And he's like, pretty sure this house is haunted. If you don't hear from me in the morning, call the police. And he's telling me all the weird stuff that's been going on.
Oh my gosh. Tell him to record it through the night.
I know. Hang on. I'm like, set up a phone and record it.
Seriously, or have, I mean, make sure he uses his sleep cycle so it picks anything
up. Ooh, yeah. He said that without anyone near it, a granite table broke. A vase cracked, again, with no one
near it. No, wait. This is real. You're talking about where Zach is.
This is Zach.
Right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And he said a plant just fell over with nobody in the room.
Ooh. Oh, my. A granite table just cracked? I'm trying to envision this. I can, and it seems really dramatic, but I can't imagine it. That in reality it was really as dramatic as I'm thinking. I don't know. That's wild.
I don't know. Which I'm like, you're a house full of guys that are drinking.
Yeah.
But the plant falling over with no one in the room is a little.
The vase break. Well, no. Vases break all the time. I don't know.
Spooky.
I'm so excited.
This is crazy. So now the house is a tourist attraction, starting in 1994. She says, quote, I have notebooks from just the last 2 years full of what overnight experiences people have had. Very few of them go away without experiencing something. They play with the children, they hear voices, and they get pictures of anomalies throughout the
night. Wait. Did you just say they play with the children?
Yeah.
And you're gonna just breeze right by that? What do you mean?
There are stories where they say, like, in the night they see the kids, and one of the rooms is the attic. It's set up like a kid's playroom. So people say that they see the kids in there and, like, actually interact with them, and there's toys and shit, like, littered all over the room. It's really creepy.
Weird.
It's gross.
Like, their kids are playing with the ghost kids.
And no, like, the adults. What the?
Okay, that is...
Yeah.
What the hell?
I mean, some families do go to this house and, like, stay the night. Guests can stay. It usually costs $428 a night. And people will pay it to spend one night in the house. And they claim a lot of weird stuff happens.
Okay, okay.
People have reported seeing children playing in the attic, seeing a man carrying an axe walking up and down the halls, and hearing the cries of the murdered family. So due to the overwhelming number of paranormal experiences reported in the house, it's become quite the hotspot for ghost hunters, paranormal investigators, the like, and they'll come with either a Ouija board, an EVP recorder to catch, you know, the, like, quiet sounds. Or some have even brought the original axe from the murders into the house in an attempt to stir up whatever dark forces lie within the walls.
Who got access to this axe? I mean, the police That's probably just handed it over. But
I know, right?
Like, how do they know?
Here, go have fun with it.
Yeah. How do they know, though?
I don't know. That's just what they say.
True.
So none of this is that surprising. You have a really gruesome murder in this house. You have an interesting woman who decides, hey, I can profit off of this. And you have people, much like us, who are willing to throw down some money to stay the night in a haunted place. Or hoping to experience some sort of haunt.
Okay.
This is all typical until November of 2014.
Oh, okay. 10 years later?
10 years later. Robert Stephen Larson Jr., he's 37 at the time. He's from Rhinelander, Wisconsin, and he was one of those typical visitors. He was part of local paranormal groups, and he decided that he was going to go with a group of family and friends for a, quote, recreational paranormal investigation. According to the Montgomery County Sheriff, Joe Sampson, he says, from my understanding, that night, he was alone in the northwest bedroom of the house. At the time, the rest of the party was outside. In the middle of the night, he was heard calling for help on their mobile two-way radios. He screamed for help, and by the time that his companions were able to find him, he had been stabbed in the chest, an apparent self-inflicted wound.
What?
And they immediately called 911, and Larson was brought to a nearby hospital to be treated.
How many stab wounds?
Just a single. He had a knife in his chest.
Oh, okay. I mean, not that it needs to be more than one for it to be unsettling, but...
Yes.
Yikes.
Okay. But yeah, just a single stab wound found with the knife in his chest. According to the Montgomery County Police report, the incident happened around 12:45 a.m., which is said to be the approximate time in 1912 when the murders of Josiah and Sarah Moore occurred. The days following, this... stabbing, this incident, obviously there was a lot of chatter and stories told about Larson, and people started to question his mental health. So I found an article from it's called the Red Oak Express. I have no idea what that is or how credible it is, but I also found similar things on Reddit. Again, debatable how credible it is, but according to the Red Oak Express, here are some quotes. What remains undetermined is what caused Larson, a husband and a father of three, to stab himself inside the home where eight people were killed with an axe in 1912, in what remains as Iowa's largest unsolved mystery. Larson was known as Buck to his family and friends. Larson had, and his wife, Amanda, were facing a foreclosure on their home, and they had to quit working due to medical conditions as well. An online fundraiser was launched with the goal of raising $4,700 for the couple, and within just a couple of months, the fundraiser had generated $5,300, allowing the family to keep their home. According to the information that was provided by the fundraiser's organizer, Jackie Martin, Larson had suffered an episode at work in which he started stuttering and twitching. A week later, he was working as a volunteer fireman. He fell while he was on a fire call, and that prompted his kind of initial visit to the doctor. After they ran some tests, it revealed that Larson's brain had frontal lobe damage, and that was believed to have been caused by several mini strokes he had suffered. In addition, he had a severe calcification on his vertebrae and severe arthritis of the spine. So according to Jackie Martin, she says, quote, "He has gone from a hardworking, contributing member of society to a man relegated to using a walker, sleeping in a bed with toddler guardrails, requiring 5 hours of home health care per day." So that's from Jackie Martin, who organized the fundraiser. So you can see why people are willing to help. Yeah,
it's not... He didn't do anything.
No. He just seemed to have a really bad string of luck.
Yeah, you don't say.
Yeah. So you have a man with a terrible string of bad luck, very sick, but with a family and a wife. He's there with his family and his friends. For some reason, feels the need to stab himself in the chest in this house. So going back to the article, someone by the name Kevin Malik, who was part of the Northern Wisconsin Paranormal Society in Rhinelander, who Larson had claimed to be a part of, he said, "I have a lot of questions for him. Did he in fact stab himself? Does he think he was under some partial demonic possession? Where did the knife come from? There are so many unanswered questions about this, and I'm just so curious." Larson has never come forward to make a public statement about what happened that night, and his family claims that they do not wish to discuss the events of that night out of respect for their friends and their family. And that's it.
Nothing else has...
He never said anything. No. He just didn't say anything. Never made a statement.
What?
Yeah. Like, you would think if he experienced some sort of, like, mental break.
Yeah.
Or anything that isn't in some way paranormal or supernatural, he would be okay with saying that.
Well...
It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, exactly. 2014. This is in 2014. I can't wrap my head around that. So there's just nothing after that.
Nothing. People still go to the house. It's still a tourist attraction. People pay to stay the night. There are all sorts of pictures and claims of what happens, no real evidence, but I found Larson's story to be the most unsettling. Why did he do it?
I also just don't understand how, because they're unsolved, not necessarily crimes, I don't know, but you would think that they would need to shut it down for some reason or another.
Right? Yeah, you would think that they would need to stop and investigate what actually took place. Not just be like, oh, he fell on a knife. Like, that's what some people say. They're just like, oh, he probably just got spooked and tripped and fell on the knife.
But...
What?
Okay. I'm pretty clumsy. And I don't know. I have just, knock on wood, never almost fallen on a knife. Like, maybe dropped it on my toe So, yeah, maybe if he'd accidentally sliced off one of his toes. But it seems like that's actually more embarrassing to... You would not want people thinking that you fell on a knife.
No. Yeah, if that's what people were saying, I would want to be like, hey, no, I'm not that big of a dumbass. That's not what happened there. I just think it's so strange for him to say nothing and for his family to be really adamant, like, we are not going to speak of that night. And I tried finding anything that was written about what happened to him, and I couldn't find anything.
That's strange. And it kind of reminds me of Kubaki, honestly. How he... I... yeah. Like, what? Stop.
Sorry.
Dr. Kubaki, our interdimensional time traveler from, what, like, 3 episodes ago?
Yeah.
So... yeah, because he just didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I feel like you don't want to talk about things that people are going to say that you're crazy for. And this is
what it keeps coming up, actually. I mean, even, what was it, in the Loveland case?
Yeah, Matthews, yeah, or whatever his name was, went back on his original story. Like, people are mean. It's sad.
Dang.
So that's the Villisca Axe Murder House.
Nothing, I mean, not like anything else needs to happen, but there haven't been any more reports of anything interesting.
Nothing violent. I mean, there's typical, like, at first I was just going to tell you about some of the, like, ghosts that people have seen and, you know, things like that. But it's nothing out of the ordinary, if you want to call that ordinary. This was the only thing that was a violent act, that someone was hurt.
Yikes.
So that's my ghost story. Kind of a ghost story.
Yeah. Kind of. I mean, it involves ghosts.
Yeah.
It involves murder.
They're certainly there.
It involves falling on knives.
He didn't fall on the knife.
No.
There's something more going on.
I mean, I guess it's just kind of tricky because there's just not more. And I guess that's the point. There's not enough. Nothing about him later saying, oh, well, actually, he did have a... he was checked into a mental hospital, or he had trauma or PTSD from something. And it's creepy just because there's nothing around it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, of course, they're not going to be making any movies or sensationalizing it more than it already is, because there's nothing really to sensationalize unless they go off script, which I know that they do with scary movies and horror films all the time. They kind of just fill in the gaps, but it's still very ongoing. It's still interesting and strange that the little hotel is still running, but...
Well, actually, in 2017, there was a movie made.
Really?
I think it's on Netflix. Yeah.
Well, they...
it got 1 star.
Clearly, the fact that no one has ever heard of it still, and yeah, then, when they do hear of it, assume that no one would make a movie because it's too soon, tells you a lot, but whatever.
Well, let me see. So, it tells the story of the original murders.
Okay.
And then it says, a century after the shocking crime put Villisca on the map, supernatural forces waiting to write the next chapter in the home's bloody history. So it sounds like they cover kind of what happened to Larson.
Hmm. I mean, hey, might be worth a boring watch.
I mean, I'd watch it. Ooh. It looks really bad.
Yeah.
Okay. There's your story.
Told me.
Your turn.
Thank you for that.
My pleasure. Tell me your story.
Tell me your story. Okay. So I'm just going to go ahead and jump right in. It's tough. Okay. So my story, I'm going the opposite direction. I love creepypasta. And I know that they're probably 99.7% of them are total crap, like just terribly written. Someone got a hold of a thesaurus and has watched too many Lifetime movies.
Okay, can I make a confession? I don't really know what creepypasta is.
What?
Yeah. I just don't get it.
I
feel like I always get Slenderman and creepypasta confused.
Well, that's... Slenderman is a creepypasta. So, creepypasta are a collection of user-generated, basically, stories that come from people. Some are purportedly real, based on true stories. Others are clearly fictional, and they just come right out and say it. Some are fictional, but they try to spin them as true stories. But that's kind of what has... I mean, that's why they're so interesting, because you have people who are taking those, like Slender Man, that are very clearly, well, I say very clearly, not real until they become someone's reality and they're killing people in his name. Right. So creepypasta for me are, they're like the seeds of what become urban legends and eventually horror films and the things that keep you up at night. Some of them are so bad and some of them are just terrible. And the ones that get me though are like the psychological kind of twists. There are some good things, but I've killed many an hour, reading these, never on the clock and, you know, never at work because that would be just...
Of course, that would be unethical. Yeah.
Time theft, people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just want to be clear about that. This is always on my own time. I mean, a lot of it really is because I like it. I haven't read them in actually quite a long time. And so I just thought I would read you one because they're fun. Okay. The ones that I wanted to read you are just too long. So... I'm not going to. They're either too long or too short. You know, there's no mama bear of these stories that are my favorites. So I am going to read you one that I haven't read before, but has a very high rating.
It's risky. Okay. So this is a first time for both of us.
So we're going to be listening or hearing Turn It Off. This is categorized in Strange and Unexplained. It's a top-ranked story and published in 2016.
Okay. Oh, am I going to get scared? I feel like I need to turn the light on.
No, you can't turn the light on. I just listened to a murder house.
Okay, fine. Go.
I went into my 120-year-old basement at midnight last night, with no lights outside and only my phone and my dog.
I can't believe you did that. Why did you do that?
I had to measure some steps.
Oh, fuck that. No.
In hindsight, I could have done it this morning, but I felt it was important to be proactive.
And it made for a really good Instagram story, so.
Yeah. It was pretty great.
I mean, you had me on the edge of the toilet seat. I was on the toilet.
Edge of the toilet seat. I rested my arms behind my head, skim reading the credits of a movie I'd just watched. After seeing them through about halfway, I lifted myself from the sofa and walked to the kitchen, stretching my arms out above me. I opened the fridge door and found a full carton of juice. So I sat down on the kitchen counter by the window, cracked open the lid, and took several long, noisy gulps. When I couldn't drink anymore, I gasped to let in new air and wiped my mouth on the back of my hand. My evenings were uneventful around this time in summer. It was 9:15 on a Saturday in July. School was out for the holidays, and my parents had gone to visit my aunt and uncle who lived by the coast. They would still be gone for 2 more weeks, and I declined the invitation to join them. I didn't dislike the place or my relatives, but we usually stayed there so long that I'd miss most of my summer break, and I'd truthfully rather spend it with my friends in town. I was a good kid who knew how to wash clothes and use an oven, and generally not an idiot, so they let me stay at the house so as long as I kept it clean. As I sat, I looked out into the garden to check for anything scary in the dark. It was empty and black. I kind of wished we had a pet. A dog or a cat would be nice about now, but their hair always made me sneeze and my eyes go red and itchy.
Yeah, what a bitch.
Yeah, okay. Just itch.
Yeah. Take some meds. Get over it. Okay.
With that in mind, my dad said no, even though I wouldn't mind it. 9:22 p.m. Oh, shit.
Sorry.
Oops.
I take it back.
Sorry, kid. Sorry. Yeah, rude dad. 9:22 p.m., I put the rest of the juice carton back in the fridge door and went back over to the window. Hoisting myself onto the counter again, I glanced out to the garden and identified the shadows one by one to make sure everything was in its place. The bushes were their usual shape. Two small trees stood together by the back fence, and a metal table with four chairs sat casually on the patio. I liked to check these things, which is largely why I wasn't scared of the dark. I would always get up to investigate small noises in the night, and I hated sleeping with my face to the wall. If someone was in my room at night, I'd rather know about it, so at least there was the faintest chance of getting away somehow. This meant that my worries were quickly put to rest, as I either found nothing downstairs but the radiator popping with the heat or opened my eyes to see an empty bedroom. Not knowing what could be making the odd noises coming from the kitchen or on the stairs or in my room, it's what makes my skin creep. Are you an investigator, or do you just, like, sit terrified?
Sit terrified, 100%. That's what I have sat for.
Oh, man. Yeah, but when he's gone, which is often.
No, I sit terrified.
Oh, dang.
Mm-mm. Do you investigate?
I do now. I used to be, like, I would, well, I used to have sleep paralysis, and then I would just, I literally couldn't move, but then, just even when I used to be scared, I would just shiver under my blankets and, yeah. But, no, now I'm just, I get up and I'm like, all right, if you're gonna kill me.
Oh, no. See, that's the only reason that I'm grateful that Finley is such a psycho. Like, there's no way anything could get in here and him not go crazy. Yeah. So that brings me a little bit of peace.
Good. Good.
Yeah. Yes, there's some good.
Well. All right.
Can't win them all.
9:30 p.m. I got down from the counter and wandered back into the living room to turn off the TV and decided to take the rest of the juice upstairs. This guy was, like, super into his juice.
Yeah, what the fuck?
We don't care about your juice, man. I went back into the kitchen.
Is he like... Okay, sorry.
I went back into the kitchen, opened the fridge door, and stopped. Turning my head to focus outside, I could see someone was standing in the garden. I shut the fridge door and turned off the light so they couldn't see me so easily, and moved slowly to lean on the kitchen counter to get a better look. All the doors were locked, and all the neighbors were home. I took a moment to remind myself this. Still, my heart quickened a bit as I stood there straining to see his or her shape in the darkness at the end of the garden. I had to keep glancing away to keep their fuzzy outline clear in my vision. They were standing very still and were a little thin, but that's all I could see. I couldn't tell anything else. Ooh. Oh.
I'm very uncomfortable. Can I please turn on the light?
Fine.
I'm so uncomfortable. Oh, this is bad. This is where I can't move. Like, I don't want to go into any other part of the house. Oh, this is such a bad idea.
Oh, man. And you're the one who came up with it, too. So you can't even pin it on me.
Okay.
All right, well. Oh, I said aloud. It was the garden umbrella leaning up against the back fence. I forgot that we used it for barbecues, and I smiled at myself, pleased that I didn't get too worked up, and went upstairs to my bedroom. I lay on the bed and propped my head up on a pillow, opening my laptop on my stomach to see if anybody was online. Apparently, someone else was bored and saw my name pop up. Chris. Hey! Me. Hey, you okay? Chris. Yeah, bored. Are your parents still away? Me. For a couple more weeks. Chris, Why don't I come around? Me. I don't want to be rude, but I kind of can't be bothered to hang out tonight, lol. Thanks, though. Chris. I know what you mean. It's cool. What about tomorrow? Me. Yeah, that sounds better. Chris. Cool. I'll be around about 1. I've got some family stuff to do in the morning. Me. Okay. Chris. Do you sell the tent, by the way? We can camp in the garden or something. Me. A slumber party. I love you too, bro. X. Chris. Whatever. LOL. You got the tent, though? Me. Yeah, somewhere. Let me check. BRB. I got up from my bed and headed to check the cupboard under the stairs. I didn't know where the tent was, but it seemed like a good place to start. I opened the cupboard door and started shifting coats aside. Some cardboard boxes were stacked up at the back and might be hiding it, so I started unstacking them. I took out a couple of the easy-to-reach ones and had a stroke of good luck as the tent bag came into view. I leaned over the other boxes and picked up the bag and took the big garden umbrella that sat beside it, just in case it rained tomorrow. I paused. I put the tent down. It took me a couple of seconds to get back to the kitchen window and focus on the darkness outside. My eyes weren't yet adjusted to the dark, so I couldn't see all the way to the back fence. Turning off the kitchen light, I leaned on the counter and continued staring at the same point. The other garden features began to fade into view one by one, fitting my previous mental image. I wasn't sure what I wanted to see. The darkness gave way to the familiar forms I knew, but after a while, I was certain there still stood a figure against the back garden fence. It hadn't moved. I stood there for 15 minutes looking at it, and I couldn't tell its shape properly, but it did look like someone standing there. I decided it wasn't a threat. I thought if I was in any real danger, I would have been a lot more worried by now. That thought kept me calm. But I also wanted to find out what it was, and I couldn't stand there forever, so I jogged upstairs, picked up my laptop, and brought it down to the counter. Me. Could you come round now? Chris. Oh. Eh? Me. Yeah, I think I can see someone or something in my garden. Chris. Well, what is it? An animal? Me. No, it's tall. I thought it was an umbrella. Chris. And now you're sure it isn't? Me. I don't know. I thought it was someone, but now I'm sure it's not a person. It just looks weird, and I don't think it was there before. Chris. Before when? Me. I don't know. Earlier today, maybe? I can't remember. Chris. Are you scared? Me. I'd feel better if someone else was here. Chris. Well, I did offer to come round, and I am bored. Me. So, yeah? Chris. Yeah, I'll come soon.
Yeah.
Me.
Chris.
Cool. Thanks. Use the front gate? I sat there watching the black shape lean against the fence for another 10 minutes. Eventually, the doorbell rang. I opened it, and Chris ran in and bear hugged me. It's been too long, Chris mock cried. Yeah, it must have been a whole day, I recorded, smiling. The torment, he replied, pretending to ignore me. Look, come over here, I said, pushing him off and walking to the kitchen. I switched off the light and pointed in the figure's direction. Look. Give me a sec, said Chris. I can't see properly. A minute later, he noticed. That black thing? Yeah. We both stood there looking at it for a while. I half expected it to be gone when he looked, but he leaned over the counter. It's just a big plant or plank of wood or something. Let's go watch TV. Would you check with me to make sure? I asked. Do you have a torch? He returned. No, I admitted. Well, we could check if we keep the kitchen light on and open the back door a little, he offered. I thought for a second and agreed, but said we should stay right by the house. We slipped on our trainers and opened the back door, stepping onto the patio. I felt the air was heavy and warm that night. Chris walked behind me. We stood very close to the door, peering at the back fence. Should we? I had just started to speak when he quickly stepped into the house again, still looking at the fence. What? I asked, following him in. I turned and realized that the figure was gone. It was obvious from the light coming from the back door that the fence and the rest of the garden was just as it always was. Where is it? Chris said. If it was leaning against the fence, it probably fell over into a bush or something. I tried to convince us both. We stared out for a few seconds longer and decided that we were too nervous to go and check. I don't usually give in to my night terrors, but now they were just beginning to click into my head. "Can you stay over for the night?" I asked Chris. Yeah, sure. It didn't sound like he really wanted to. He kept his eyes on the fence. We both went inside and locked the door before going up to my room. I got out a sleeping bag for Chris and drew the curtains without looking outside into the garden again. We talked about stupid stuff for a couple of hours to take our minds off the garden and fell asleep. Sounds like basically every one of our slumber parties.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just falling asleep to stupid talk. In the morning, I found Chris's sleeping bag empty. I called up Chris and he said he was downstairs, so I threw on a t-shirt and went down. "Sleep well?" I asked. "Yeah, pretty well, but I kept thinking about the garden and stuff. But hey, did you find that tent?" he returned. Yeah, I answered, remembering that shape which I had forgotten about until now. "Well, I was thinking about camping thing and thought maybe we could bring the tent to my house. It would just make a change, you know?" I didn't have to ask him why. I wasn't too keen on staying in my garden after last night. Wait, last night? Come to think of it, the sun was up and I wanted to check the garden. Well, it wasn't pitch black. I asked Chris and he hesitantly agreed. We put on our trainers. Wait.
What?
Sorry. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I'm turning my light on now, though. I just heard something.
I'm freaked as fuck. I'm, like, trying to play it cool.
Oh. It's the cat under the table. I was like, all right. I heard something.
Something is working.
Oh, my gosh. It's the umbrella. Okay. We put on our trainers and stepped out into the garden. I don't know what we were so worried about. It was bright and colorful. The plants and bushes around the edges of the garden smelled good, and there was a bird in one of the small trees singing out for its mate somewhere. We walked to the back fence to find nothing out of place and looked over the bushes in front of the paneling to check if anything lay behind them. We found nothing. I walked around the edge of the whole garden once more while Chris tried whistling to the bird. It cocked its head from side to side, trying to figure him out. It was a warm day. Perfect for camping that evening, I decided. Great. We talked as we filled a couple of rucksacks with sleeping bags and some food from the kitchen. We didn't want to set up a fire, so we packed some tinned hot dogs, bread, packet of tomatoes and chocolate, as well as some bottles of water. "There's a forest just next to my house, which is actually pretty good," Chris explained. "Our garden backs onto the edge of it. I stayed in a tent there once with my dad for the first little camping trip when I was like 7. I remember I was so excited at the time. I thought we were really roughing it like some hardcore mountaineers." Chris laughed at himself. "If we get too cold or need more food, we can just go to my house. My parents are out, so we'll have free run of the place anyway." "Yours are away too?" I questioned. "It's their anniversary, so they're out for the night," he explained. "They're staying in a hotel the next town over, and they'll be back in the morning." Apparently, leaving your kids behind was in fashion this summer.
You chose to stay behind, kid.
Come on. Like, "I don't want to go see my aunt."
Yeah.
She smells like...
Fucking dramatic.
Salami. I don't know. At about noon, we left my house with the two rucksacks, a sleeping bag for each of us, and the tent, and made our way to Chris's house. It was fairly close by and a part of the same pleasant neighborhood. We talked and joked a lot walking side by side, nodding and greeting a couple of familiar neighbors as we went. It was a crazy nice day. The sun was almost too much. It was hot on our necks, and the trees by the sidewalk seemed to glow green from underneath as the sunlight passed through the leaves. A sprinkler offered us some water as we walked by one house, and it felt good on my hot arms. I was already sweating by the time we got to Chris's place. We hadn't been walking for more than 20 minutes. We didn't go inside his house immediately because it was so hot, so we went straight to his garden and dumped our bags in the shade. He wasn't joking. The gate of his garden backed straight onto an impressive forest. Very tall, thin trees stood high above the house and continued as far as I could see. Some bushes and shrubs littered the forest floor, but most of it was either grass or fairly smooth sections of dirt. I didn't see how this forest was classified as small. "Looks good, right?" he boasted. "It's awesome," I admitted, opening the gate and surveying the area. I walked out in between the trees and found a flat spot for the tent. I turned around to ask Chris's opinion and paused, a little disappointed. It didn't feel like real camping when his house was so obviously in our faces. "Let's go in a little further, so it at least feels legit," I said, and walked back to pick up my bags. Chris objected to carrying his heavy shit any further. We walked in a straight line from Chris's house and kept checking behind us until the house was just about obscured by trees in front of each other. We had only gone a very short way, but the forest was already thicker and greener. There was even a long rope swing hanging from one of the trees, but it looked too old to hold our weight, so we decided to keep our spines unbroken and give it a miss. I unpacked the tent and set it up with Chris's help, and we threw our sleeping bags inside. I lay down inside to test it out. It was so warm and humid, I had to adjust my breathing for a second. I stepped out again and asked Chris if he had a torch for the evening. "I can do better than that," was his response, and he took off towards the house. I was too hot to run after him, so I opened my rucksack and cracked open a bottle of water, downing half of it and putting the rest back in the pack. I lay down on a patch of grass and looked up at the canopy. The leaves were shifting gently in the breeze. I couldn't feel from down here, but I watched them sway and mesh together until I heard Chris return. "Did you get a torch?" I asked, closing my eyes. The sun shone through my eyelids and colored my vision red. I listened to the soft ground of his footsteps on the grass as he walked past me toward the rope swing. "It's not going to hold you," I warned as I heard him tug the branch with a small creak. He tugged it and it creaked in response. I listened. He tugged it once more, and again. There was a moment of silence as I guessed he was still weighing it up, and then another tug. He continued to tug a few more times, and the creaking followed each one. I was sure it wouldn't hold his weight, and I smiled, predicting one big creak and as a snap as the rope or the branch broke. I waited as some final tugs were made. Creak, creak. I waited still. Creak, creak, creak. "Yo!" I heard Chris's voice coming from his garden. I sat bolt upright, almost spraining my neck as I snapped my head sideways to face his house. He was jogging through the trees holding an electric lantern. I switched my gaze in the other direction toward the rope swing. It was hanging still, nothing nearby. I stood up and turned full circle. Nothing in any direction.
Mm-mm.
"What?" I mouthed to myself, walking towards the rope. I tugged it gently. It didn't creak. I pulled it harder. It didn't creak. My mouth went dry. I jumped up, grabbed hold, and yanked it down. The branch bent a little as my feet touched the floor, and still, it didn't make a sound. I kept hold of it as I stared up towards the branches, but eventually the rope gave way under my weight somewhere in the middle, and a soft thud fell on my ears as a thick rope fell in front of me. Chris was rattling the lantern as he came by. "I've never used this before. I got it for Christmas from my cousin. She buys some weird presents, but, I see the swing is dead. Let's have a proper burial in memory of all the joy it gave us." I didn't respond. I continued looking up at the branch with half a rope swing tied to it. "Hey, are you good?" Chris followed my gaze. "I thought you'd already come back," I said immediately. I wasn't the type to let things slide with an, "Oh, it's nothing." "What?" he replied. "Someone walked by me and was messing around with the rope swing." "Who was it?" "I don't know." "Are they still around?" "I don't know. I had my eyes closed and was lying just there," I pointed, "but then I heard you shout, so I looked around and there was nothing here. I heard them walk by my head." I felt a bit sick. "Look, calm down a second," Chris began. "It's the middle of the day, we're 30 feet from my house, and even if it was a person, so what? It's just some public woods, anyone can come through here." That made some sense, and he was right about it being public, but then where were they? I glanced around one more time. However, the trees quickly layered up and I couldn't see far at all. I guessed it was possible for me to lose track of someone here in a short distance. "Okay," I said. "Man, I can stay alone in the house for 2 weeks on end, but I can't handle a short walk through the woods on a summer's day." "That's why you've brought some muscle," declared Chris, wielding the lantern above his head, and I laughed. We spent the day walking around the forest and returned to the tent to get some water when we were too hot. We talked about school and what our plans were for the future. We talked about dreams we'd had, ghosts and creatures that lurked in the dark. Neither of us were too scared of things like that, but they made for some good camping stories. Chris told a particularly good one of a woman who lived in the woods. She had the head of a cat, and if you heard her raspy meow, that meant she was trying to find you. If she stopped meowing, it signified you were found, and she was quickly making her way towards you. It made my skin crawl a little, and we stopped telling stories soon after that. The light of day eventually faded, and it was getting hard to see, so we headed back to the tent for the night. The impressive heat during the day had killed our appetites, so we left the food for now and decided we'd eat it in the night if we got hungry. Chris hung the electric lantern at the front of the tent, flicking it on as he did so. It was surprisingly bright and spilled the yellow light onto the ground and onto the trees that faced us. The warm glow looked dramatic, but whatever was beyond the light was hidden in blackness. Our immediate area was clear, but after a few paces, the light seemed to stop dead. It looked weird. Chris ducked under the tent opening, and I followed him. The sleeping bags looked inviting as the heat from earlier had gone, and it was too cold for shirts and shorts. We got inside them and took the lantern with us. "Can you hear meowing?" I said, my head tilted as I strained to hear. "Yeah, I can hear some bullshit, too." Chris smiled and zipped up his sleeping bag. Damn, I thought I had him. Oh well. I zipped up my own bag and we were laying there talking for a little while, and then the exhaustion of such a summer's hot day hit us, and we fell asleep. I had a dream that we were walking to Chris's house, but there were more trees than before, and it was getting dark very quickly. I blinked, and suddenly it was night, with the forest sprawling in every direction. The rope swing hung in front of me. I turned around and Chris was gone. I heard a creak behind me, and a feeling came over me like I'd missed a step on the stairs. For some reason, I couldn't turn around. I started walking straight ahead, and the rope swing soon came into my view again. I was aware I was in a nightmare. The rope swing slowly lifted itself up into the trees, and I watched it disappear. I walked over and stood beneath where it had been, and there was a rustle above me. As I lifted my eyes to the canopy, a black figure with the head of a cat came hurtling downwards with its mouth open horrifically wide. One of its teeth touched my left eye, and I tore myself awake, gasping as I sat up in the tent. My back was damp with sweat, and Chris was asleep next to me. The lantern was still on, and I could see our backpacks at the end of the tent. I took a moment to breathe, and then let myself lie back down, my head thumping on the floor a little too hard. I winced and reached for the bottle of water to my side, downing a few mouthfuls. I couldn't fall asleep with the glow of the lantern on my eyelids, so I sat up and searched the tent for it. I quickly realized the light was coming from outside. "Mm-mm." "Chris?" I said, still confused from sleep. He mumbled something in reply. "Chris, where's the lantern?" "Somewhere," he said slowly and sleepily before turning over. Looking around again, the light was obviously coming from outside, and I weighed up the options. Either some murderer had snuck into our tent and done nothing but take the lantern outside, or we didn't actually bring it into the tent, as I had remembered. That sounded more convincing, so I knelt by the tent door and unzipped it. From the opening I looked around, it wasn't immediately obvious where the glow was coming from. Why couldn't I see it? I looked up. The lantern was resting 20 feet in the air, hanging in the dark. Goosebumps swept across my skin, and I zipped up the door before shaking Chris. "Chris, please wake up." He heard the urgency in my voice and sat up. "What? What's wrong?" Chris said, rubbing his eyes. "The lantern's hanging outside." "But I brought it in," he assured me. I felt sick as my reasoning broke. We both looked at the front of the tent. "We should go back to the house," I said, my resolve buckling. "I was just a kid in the forest whose parents were away." "I'm not walking through the dark," he replied. Chris was now looking worried. "We've got a lantern." I stopped myself. We looked at the front of the tent again. We couldn't sit there forever. We were getting scared as we sat there doing nothing. So this was the plan. We weren't going back to sleep. We would get the lantern back somehow, leave everything here, and spend the night in Chris's house. I hated being the one to go first. I wanted to turn back, even just crouching by the tent entrance, unzipping the fabric door. I looked around. Nothing. I peered over the tent behind us. Nothing in sight. Literally nothing. Everything was black outside of the light. I took a step out and it was cold. Chris said the same as he stood right by my side looking over his shoulder. He turned back and saw the lantern in the air. Oh my God. We stood there looking at it for a few seconds. It seemed to crawl by. Eventually, I worked out which tree it was hanging from. The broken rope swing at my feet confirmed it. Way up out of reach, the lantern hung above our heads, tied to the other end of the rope that still dangled from the darkness. I couldn't work it out. It was high up, too high up even for a ladder. The trees were thin and bare besides the leaves that made up the canopy. There was nowhere to climb. Picking up the length of rope that had snapped off earlier, I bundled it up and tied a knot and aimed at the lantern. I took a step back and jumped, tossing it into the air. It caught the lantern on its side and sent it swinging. It threw shadows rocking around us, and I suddenly wished I hadn't hit it. The light made the shadows lean from side to side with the lanterns, and the horrible, unnatural swaying made me panic, and my eyes became wet as fear took solid hold of me. I picked up the rope again and lobbed it desperately at the lantern. I missed, and the bundle of rope sailed off into the darkness. Helplessly, I turned to Chris, who had already grabbed his backpack. He spun around and threw it out with a yelp, and it hit the lantern dead on. It fell and thudded to the floor with a crack, but the light was still on. I ran to pick it up. I turned to Chris and almost cried with relief. Okay, go, let's go, I urged, and he started jogging quickly towards his house as I followed. We half ran, half stumbled off into the dark, checking over our shoulders and working ourselves up as our thoughts were consumed by everything that may be waiting in the trees for us. I don't know how long we were moving, but it soon became apparent that Chris's house wasn't in this direction. For God's sake, where is it? Chris said, tension taking hold of his voice. We'll have to find the tin and try again. A couple of tears were forming at the corners of his eyes. They were probably on mine too, but my heart was thumping so hard I didn't notice. Okay. I took a breath and we turned around, heading in a straight line directly behind us. What if we didn't find the tent? I couldn't stop myself thinking that over and over as we retraced our steps. We walked for what seemed like twice as long before the light finally fell on the side of the tent. We ran up and stood close to its side, looking around to try and figure out which direction we should go. The silence was like the buildup of a nightmare right before some horrible thing lurches out at you, screaming. The comparison made me gag, and I scrunched my eyes shut, the hair on my skin lifting. My temples were so hot, it felt like my brain was thudding against the inside of my skull. I couldn't begin to guess where the house was. I could see about 10 feet from the lantern, and then pitch black. There were no clues. Every direction looked wrong, and Chris took the lantern from me and walked in a small circle, straining his eyes to see. I stayed put. Chris, turn it off. I whispered to him hurriedly. What? He asked. I stepped quickly and quietly towards him, bringing my face to his. There's something in the tent.
No.
His gaze shifted past towards the tent, and he stood there staring. We were standing on the left-hand side of the tent, and from this angle, I could just about see the unzipped door hanging open, but I remembered leaving it that way, so that wasn't what was making me clench my teeth together. A few feet away, my rucksack sat outside on the dry earth, with the food I had packed now neatly arranged trailing from it. Our sleeping bags were also nicely laid out end to end, making the line of belongings lead straight into the mouth of the tent. I took a careful step forward so the light could pass more easily through the fabric. It couldn't have been a trick of the light. Something big and dark was obviously crouched, with what I guessed was its front facing the open door. I hated myself for not seeing it sooner. It didn't move at all or seem to breathe. It just sat, waiting for us to investigate the display it had made. Turn it off, I whispered again. Chris continued staring, deaf to me. Chris, I pleaded in a whisper. A voice from nearby joined in.
No.
Chris. Chris. We both heard it, and the blood fell in our veins. It came from the tent. A slow, strained rasp of a voice that sounded like a parrot copying a new word. The sound clicked across my skin and crept into my ears. The light flicked off with a click that was too loud. Chris grabbed my shoulder, and I clenched my fist closed painfully tight. We stood there in complete darkness. I didn't want to move, and I didn't want to stay. My brain fought for control as my legs waited for a decision rooted in place. We breathed shallow, quiet breaths. Blackness pressing on our eyes like water. Sweat ran down my neck. I couldn't see the tent. Chris, something said, turn it off. My stomach flipped inside out as the thing in the tent played with my words. I quickly grabbed Chris's hand, yanking him in the opposite direction. I ran like I'd never run before, Chris's legs thudding alternately with mine. The sprint continued for about a minute. We lost ourselves as we ran through an absolute darkness. I forgot where we were, and I couldn't see what was in front of my face, but I ran head into a tree, and my forehead struck its side with a sickening, hollow knock. Sparks lit up inside my eyes as I choked back the pain. It hurt so much I couldn't breathe. Chris tried to pull me on, but I buckled to the floor on my knees and threw up. As I collapsed onto my back, my head went numb. Chris lifted me up. Please don't stop. Please, please, he begged. I couldn't reply. Please, please keep going. I forced my legs to take my weight as I locked my knee upright, leaning on Chris. My body felt empty and a little blood rolled down my forehead and into my brow. I wiped it away as I tried to grasp the situation again, but the pain was too much. Wait, I can't, I begged. Just wait. We stood together in the inky woods, but we could have been anywhere. I couldn't see Chris as he huddled next to me, and it didn't feel like darkness. It felt like someone had wrapped my head in a blanket. Neither of us said a word as we waited, but our breathing was loud, and I wondered from what distance it could be heard. Reality began to return to me, and the pain was now just about bearable. I straightened up, grasping at what was happening. The pins of fear sank into me a second time, and I started counting in my head. 1 minute passed by without any sound in the world. The wind was dead, and the birds might be too. Another minute went by, but I continued counting. 3 more minutes. We were still alone. Was it even looking for us? I reached for Chris's arm in the dark. He jumped when I touched it, but I steadied him with the other, and he was still holding the lantern. Good. We had light on our side. Now, if only we could use it. I went over the events hurriedly in my mind. The lantern was hanging from a tree. We got out of the tent, then we couldn't find our way home. By the time we returned to the tent, something was in it. But then why did it take the lantern and do nothing while we slept? If it was sheer luck that we were alone when we were trying to get the lantern, I wondered just how small the possibility was of us getting a second chance. I stayed silent for a moment and then whispered as best as I could. Chris, we need to turn on the lantern. We need to fucking get away from here. We can make a run for your house, but we have to see. No, please, we have to stay here, Chris tried to whisper. We can wait for morning if we have to. You can't turn it on. I could hear in his voice that a sob was breaking through. Just keep quiet. You fucking have to, please. I parted my lips to try again, but as I did, I heard something. A very faint clicking sound from somewhere in the dark. It was almost inaudible, but it was there. An irregular, stuttering clicking sound. It sounded like fingernails on a wooden table, and it was moving. It came from in front of us. I was sure of it. A steady click, clack, click filled my ears as we tried to gauge the distance. It was drawing close. Click, clack, click. It stopped. I was glad for the first time in my life that I couldn't see what was waiting in the dark. Perhaps that meant we were also hidden. As my thoughts fired off in every direction, I gave the thing in the darkness the image of the cat-headed woman, and it terrified me. I was just waiting to hear that meow, but my ears were met with something else. Chris. I tensed my throat and tried not to cry. Chris. It said his name twice, and I cupped my hand over my mouth. The horrible scraping dialogue sounded a few steps away. The words were said oddly, with no meaning behind them. They were just sounds that the thing had picked up and was now using them to catch us out in the dark. Chris let go of my hand, and I heard his foot plant softly on the grass behind him as he prepared to run. "Don't you dare," I tried to project into his mind. "Don't you make a sound. Chris, please." It sounded so wrong, drawn out like a door slowly opening. Chris let out a whimper as it called him. I froze and waited for something, anything to happen. There was a long silence, and I held my breath for as long as I could. I couldn't wait anymore. Very slowly, I reached out to Chris and put my hand on his shoulder, and very carefully, we both lifted our feet and managed to step without making a sound. We backstepped away from the voice and didn't stop moving, but ever so carefully. So slowly. I didn't care how long it would take us to get somewhere. If it took us an hour every step, we were going to get out. Chris backed into a tree and gasped audibly. The clicking started up immediately. Click, click, clack, click, clack. It rolled on, consistently moving towards us. I didn't know what to do. All I could think of was to screw my eyes shut and try not to scream. As we stood there, the clicking came to a stop, an arm's length away from where we stood. Silence. "Chris, turn it on, please." Fear took over. Chris switched on the light and tore off in the other direction without looking behind him. I wheeled in place and held that lantern in my sight like nothing else existed. We didn't dare look at the thing, but we could hear it. Our footsteps thudded on the grass, and the thing pursued us with a tap, 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 now like scurrying little claws on hard earth. As I ran desperately to catch up to the light, the sound suddenly rose up behind me and over our heads in between the trees. This wasn't happening. It was going to drop down on us. "Turn!" I screamed. I didn't care anymore. If we were going to get out of our lives, we were going to have to run for them. We suddenly changed course. The tapping stopped for a moment, long enough for us to gain a few feet before it came in our direction again. My legs were cramping horribly, and Chris was gasping hard. We couldn't keep this up. Where were we? I saw the light from the lantern come to an abrupt halt up ahead. I didn't have time to stop and brace myself to thump into Chris, but the light passed beneath my feet. He had dropped the lantern. I turned my head and watched it recede into the darkness. It was immediately too far for me to go back. The thing would be on me in a second. "Chris!" I was crying and wiping tears from my cheeks as I ran, preparing for my face to connect with a tree at any moment. "Keep going!" I heard Chris from up ahead. "There's a light!" My vision was bleary from tears, but couldn't see it. An orange glow hanging in the air in the distance. Another one? What was happening? I wanted to scream at him to avoid it, but I realized that it was a streetlight. My legs felt like I was running through water, but I pushed them harder with a goal in sight. Gradually and painfully, the light drew closer, as did the clicking. This thing could move like nothing I knew. I saw Chris's figure pass underneath the streetlight, and then he was gone again. "Don't stop!" I yelled as I approached the edge of the forest, and my legs adjusted as the forest floor gave way to solid footing. I could see a row of more streetlights leading off to the right, and Chris's figure was passing regularly underneath each. When I was sure I was completely out of the trees, I didn't stop, and I ran under several more streetlights, putting as much distance as I could manage between us and the edge of the woods. I realized after a while that the clicking had stopped. I needed to see we were okay. I turned my head and looked back along the row of lights, keeping my gaze on the first light. My pace slowed as the pain in my head and legs came back. There was silence once more, and the lights revealed an empty pathway. I jogged on and kept my eyes on the glow, expecting to see something at any minute, but it lit up nothing but concrete and the edge of the road. "Is it there?" The question pulsed in my mind over and over. As I turned my head to continue catching up to Chris, I caught sight of something pass under the first streetlight. An almighty shock went through me as my fears were confirmed. I let out a cry and picked up the pace once more, sprinting between the lights. The image was burned into my mind. I had hardly caught a glimpse of the thing, but it was white. It was massive. It almost brushed the streetlight as it went under it. It had a long, upright body full of kinks, like it had just unfolded itself, and that's all I was able to tell. It must have had a face and limbs, but I didn't have time to see. I didn't look again. The path gave way to more lights, and soon I could see the glow of windows and some houses on either side of the road. I recognized where we were, close to my house by some miracle. A little further and we'd be there. "My house!" I yelled, and Chris listened, turning left onto a side street and dashing down. With panic on my side, I reached the turning and looked down the road to see Chris jumping the fence into my garden. "Hurry up!" I heard him scream. Reaching the fence, I planted my hands on top, hoisting myself over and shredding my elbows in the process. My ankles stung as I thudded into the garden and sprinted towards the kitchen door. Chris stepped aside, gasping for air as I fumbled the key into the lock and wrenched it sideways. We both flew into the kitchen and slammed the door behind us. I locked it from the inside, and we both sprinted upstairs into the bathroom, locking it behind us. "What was that?" I managed to say in a panic whisper, wondering if it would get in. "Did you see it?" "No." Chris crouched under the window, letting tears roll. "Shit, it was so tall, Don't tell me," Chris cut me off. I mulled it over again and again as we sat there. Minutes slowly ticked by into hours. My head was fizzing all the while, and I could still hear its voice, that disgusting voice. My elbows and forearms were sticky with blood, and we both looked at the floor, the occasional sob coming from the both of us. Our hearts banged in our chest, and we spent the night that way. Light streamed in from the window, but we didn't unlock the bathroom door until noon. We crept downstairs, the kitchen door was still locked, and nothing was in the house. I looked out of the living room window. Another perfect day. No people walked by, but the sprinklers were on, and I could hear birds again. It helped calm our nerves. "That tent can stay there," I said at last. "Yeah," Chris agreed. We stayed in the living room with the TV off all day. We didn't know what to do and talked about if we should call the police or something. The day crawled by as we tried to rake our thoughts together and think of what to do next, but all that went through my mind was what had just happened, not what we should be doing. By the time it was dark, at about 9 p.m., the phone rang. It was Chris's parents asking if I had seen him, as they were getting worried. They'd just got back from out of town. I let them know he was okay and asked if they could come and pick us both up from my house because something had happened. They wanted to know what, but I said we'd both tell them when they get here. They said they'd be here soon. Relief washed over us as adults were on the way to make everything all right. They would believe us. We didn't lie about these things. And even if they were skeptical, they'd at least believe that some dangerous animal was in the forest, and that was good enough for us. I went into the kitchen to get some juice from the fridge and realized I hadn't had a drink all day. I could hear water dripping in the sink, so I turned the faucet tighter and glugged some juice. As I headed towards the living room, the water started to tap again. I flicked the light on and realized it wasn't coming from the sink. Or anywhere in the room, for that matter. It sounded like it was coming from further away. I looked out into the garden and could just about see a fuzzy, tall silhouette leaning up against the back fence in the dark. Actually, the tapping sounded more like clicking. The figure slowly moved away from the fence and clicked across the grass towards the house. "Please..." The end.
Fucking shit, man.
Credit goes to user Paulum Chill. I wish you could see Brooke's face right now.
Fuck all of that. That was so... Oh my god. I'm so tense. I'm like shaky. I'm scared to move.
Dang it. All right, good night.
You read that shit for fun? Oh my god.
Yeah.
I like can't move.
Oh man. Yeah. I'm surprised actually I hadn't read that before just because I've read so many, but I mean, I guess they're churned out. I read them a lot. I think it was more like 2011, 2012. I haven't read them very much as of late, so this would have come out after my creepypasta time. But it's so funny because I just feel like the characters actually sound like similar to stuff we would do when we were kids, just kind of camp out in the backyard and have our little slumber parties and sleep outside. I don't know.
Yeah, sleep out on the trampoline and yeah. stuff. I know, while you were reading this, I was like, I'm never sleeping in the woods again. I'm not doing anything. I'm just never going to leave the house.
I'm not doing anything. Not drinking juice.
Never going to drink juice. Oh my word. And like nothing even really happened. But that was so scary.
Yeah, like actually nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
As far as like it never touched them. He just ran into a tree.
Oh my god. What am I supposed to do now?
Watch some Office? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say. My idea of a ghost story was a little bit different than yours.
It was a scary story.
Oh my gosh, that was really long.
Yeah. It said, like, the amount of time, but I guess if you're reading it out loud.
Yeah. That was good. Good job, whatever your name was.
I kept getting thrown off by, like, really bad spelling errors and incorrect grammar.
Well, just, like, some of the vocabulary was, like, God, what was the... not a knapsack, but a... what did they call it?
Well, I think they were... this author was probably from the UK, though, because I just noticed a lot of the terminology was, like, stuff that...
Well, yeah, they said, like, on holiday and...
and, like, train...
something else.
Yeah, trainers. What was the...
oh, yeah, trainers.
Torch. That was the other one. Yeah, so, sorry.
Thanks.
What do you do after you watch a scary movie?
Watch something stupid on TV?
Yeah.
When we were little, like, in the Gig Harbor house, when we would watch a scary movie, we would watch We Sing in Sillyville.
Oh my gosh.
Did I ever make you watch that with me?
No, you were never scared when I was scared. It's like we've done a 180. Because I used to be so just terrified of everything. Like, I loved it. I loved watching scary movies, always. But
you would get very upset.
Like, sobbing, could not sleep by myself. But clearly that has diminished over time. The mind, strange how it changes like that.
Yeah, it was just really strange, like... the things that I never used to worry about that I worry about all the time now. I don't know. Just much more of an anxious person than I ever was.
But that's not to say I'm not anxious, because I, like, one of my biggest anxieties is running over, like, squirrels or a raccoon or something.
Huh.
It's so...
I have a really bad one about my tire popping. I will drive myself into a panic thinking that my tire is going to pop. And I don't know what to do. I just don't know how to handle that. I've never, knock on wood, I've never been in a car where the tire goes flat. And then I just, like, wait for it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I like, sometimes almost start crying thinking of hitting an animal in my car. Yeah. And I don't know why, because I don't feel that way about people. I mean, that would obviously be horrible. I don't want to hit a person. I don't. But I don't have that.
But you don't think about it.
I mean, I do, but it doesn't. It doesn't.
What are you trying to say?
I don't know. I have a very specific fear of even seeing a squirrel get hit, though.
Yeah.
I don't know why squirrels. Because I've never had a massive affinity for squirrels. It's always been chipmunks, but...
yeah, I mean, kind of similar. I get really worked up when we're driving around, like, in the mountains, or pretty much anytime I see an Animal Crossing, or am reminded that at any moment an animal could jump out and, like, ruin us, I'll stress myself into a tizzy about it.
And that kind of makes sense, though, because if you hit a moose, you're done.
Yeah, or like a deer jumps out.
You're totaled. Like
yeah.
It's spooky.
It's a spooky.
Any questions? I'm going to listen to that to make me feel better.
Yeah.
When did this come? Oh, 2016.
A good year for David S. Pumpkins.
Oh, man.
Now we know the cure. It's all it takes. All it takes is some David S. Pumpkins. It's good to know.
And he slapped him on the ass.
All right, everyone. We've lost Mills to David S. Pumpkins for the rest of the evening. We're going to allow her to enjoy this. So thanks for listening.
I needed this. I needed that.
It's fair. It's fair.
Are you not spooked? Was it not spooky reading it?
It was when I thought I heard something behind me, but it was my cat. It was the cat woman.
Ooh, cat face woman.
Well, if you need to go watch some David S. Pumpkins, like Brooke, or just get some more snacks like me, then let us know. Because we want to know. What scares you? Like, what are your scariest stories or greatest fears? I mean, don't get too personal here, but let us know. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Something Weird Podcast.
And if you enjoyed any bit or maybe all of our podcasts in this week's special spooky stories, please let us know and give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts because it makes a big difference so we can keep scaring the shit out of each other, or maybe just me.
It's pretty great. It's pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, this...
Take me on a roller coaster. It's a very different story.
True. I'll get you back with a roller coaster. Ugh,
never.
Or two. Well, we hope you enjoyed our special Halloween edition and some spooky tales. You have a nice murder house and whatever the fuck Anna just read. Hopefully it doesn't keep you up at night because it's going to keep me up tonight. Can't wait. So until next time, we'll be back with our usual schedule of events. So thanks for listening, everyone.
Stay weirdy.
Happy Halloween. Ding 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 ding